the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation, here's Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Good Monday morning, and thanks for starting off your work week with us here at AgNet West. Well, today we aren't sparing any time, and we're going to jump right into the headlines for the show. Brian German is talking with us about a USDA report that shows half of fresh produce spoils in transit. You'll hear details on the dairy margin coverage program. And on Friday, we heard a report that California strawberries were helping to open up the first Costco ever in China. Well, today, Taylor Hillman has details on how prior work set up California strawberries for their international success. And I'm starting off the show today with some news on a study that highlights the economic benefits of healthy soil practices. Let's jump right in. A study highlighting the benefits of healthy soil practices made a big difference in how many times a California almond grower sprayed miticide. The American Farmland Trust and California NRCS partnered on a study highlighting the benefits of environmentally sound farming practices, specifically how they can benefit an operation economically. They looked at four types of practices.
So the four practices that we were looking at are nutrient management, applying compost to the orchard, mulching of prunings, and conservation cover, which is really just a fancy way of saying he let the native vegetation grow all winter.
That was Justin Bedell of American Farmland Trust. Bedell focused on the California almond grower case, who has been implementing conservation cover for more than 15 years throughout his orchard.
For example, the conservation cover, again, there's a distinction between cover crops, which are intentionally planted vegetation traditionally over winter between growing seasons, versus conservation cover. But both of them provide habitat for beneficial insects.
And by letting that conservation cover grow over winter, the grower found
he had more beneficial insects, which meant that he applied a miticide less frequently now than he did before. So before he let that conservation cover grow, he did miticide 4 out of every 5 years. But now that he has this habitat for the beneficial insects, he only needs to spray his miticide once every 5 years.
Bedell added,
yeah, that's just one example. He switched from burning his prunings to mulching, which really is a very common practice. The burning is, there's really not a whole lot of that done anymore, but it's still helpful to him because it provides organic matter in the soil, which improves soil water holding capacity. And then the compost that he applies increases the microbial activity and again increases the water holding capacity. And the nutrient management allows him to really dial in exactly how much nitrogen he needs to apply so that there's no extra nitrogen that's applied.
And now here's Taylor Hillman with more agriculture news.
A couple of international expos set a California produce company up for some recent success. As AgNet West reported last week, California Giant Berries was proud to have strawberries from the Golden State at the opening of China's first Costco in Shanghai. The process happened rather quickly, and California Giant COO Joe Barcy said they were the only company that was asked to pull off the feat, and that was due to prior infrastructure put into place.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, and it's kind of like, I don't say it, we were lucky because, you know, obviously the definition of luck was where preparation meets opportunity. And so ironically, in the last couple of years, we've shipped berries for the California Strawberry Commission to a show they have in Shanghai, actually, or somewhere in China. It's a food show. And so we have certain ranches and growers that are set up to do it. You know, obviously, there's a lot of requirements involved with being able to do it. So we were prepared when Costco reached out to us. We'd already agreed to, our field people contacted me the week before and said, hey, you know, this commission wants to ship some fruit to Shanghai for a trade show. You know, should we do it? I said, yeah, you know, we're a good player in the industry and we want to take care of help support the industry. So I said, let's do it. If we can make it, great. So, and then ironically, the next week, you know, our Costco buyer here dialed our number and talked to Nick Chappell here, who's our director of retail sales, and said, hey, we have a new warehouse opening up in Shanghai, and would you guys be able to ship berries here? And say, well, yeah, we'll try it. Let's see what happens. So we were prepared, you know, there was a lot, you know, there's some luck involved as it relates to, you know, you hope you don't find a certain pest that's in the lot or something like that, that would get it rejected. But it was, I think the process started like on Monday or Tuesday, early Tuesday. And then by the time we had all the berries packed up and all the phytosanitary inspections, I don't think it really got released until Friday. So, you know, obviously strawberries are pretty perishable, but it was a new crop, fall crop, strawberry crop that we added from. And, you know, we had a designated, I think we had a block of like 80 acres that was designated, that was qualified for China. And with that, you know, it has to be registered in advance. You know, in other words, if somebody called up and said, hey, can you supply us with berries to China, you know, we already have to have registered ranches, growers, and shippers with the California Strawberry Commission. So, and a lot of other stuff, you know, in terms of designated blocks and lot numbers and all of that has to be ready to go in order to be able to ship berry there.
Reporting for AgNet West, I'm Taylor Hillman.
The deadline to sign up for the Dairy Margin Coverage Program is fast approaching. Dairy producers have until Friday, September 20th, to sign up for the program at their local Farm Service Agency office. The deadline is also the last opportunity to request a refund of Margin Protection Program for dairy premiums. Enrollment for the DMC program began back in June and has already generated a significant amount of interest from the industry. FSA has been issuing payments to producers who have already purchased coverage since July. Producers have the option of enrolling for 1 year or for the full 5-year length of the program at a reduced premium rate. The program provides coverage retroactive to January 1st of this year, with applicable payments following soon after enrollment. Dairy producers can choose coverage levels when they sign up that ranges between $4 and $9.50. Again, producers who wish to sign up have less than 2 weeks to enroll by September 20th. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. More agriculture news and farm features are coming up. Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City News Day. We've got more agriculture news right now.
The California company just received a significant funding boost to expand development of its robotic equipment. Advanced Farm Technologies, headquartered in Davis, is the first American company to commercialize robotic strawberry harvesting using the company's T6 platform, designed specifically for soil-planted beds. The company just received significant support from investors in a Series A funding round to the tune of $7.5 million. Yamaha Motor Ventures and Laboratory Silicon Valley was the largest single investor, with other funding coming from Kubota, Catapult Ventures, and Impact Venture Capital. Harvest services for California strawberry growers is available through the Advanced Farm Technologies website, as well as information to request a demonstration of the equipment. Company CEO Mark Grossman said in a news release that, quote, "With this investment, we can expand our lead in robotic strawberry harvesting and continue to innovate in other areas." I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Well, in today's livestock news, USDA's Farm Service Agency wants to remind dairy producers the deadline to sign up for the Dairy Margin Coverage, or DMC, program is nearing. That deadline is September 20th. Now, DMC does provide coverage retroactive to January 1 of 2019, with applicable payments following soon after enrollment. USDA Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation Bill Northey reminds producers you can choose between the $4 to $9.50 coverage levels.
We all hope that the margin is much better than a $9.50 margin coverage here. But if it's not, for a small premium, you have some coverage and that can get you where hopefully the margin is better again.
Now, DMC does offer catastrophic coverage at no cost to the producer other than the annual $100 administration fee. Producers can opt for greater coverage levels for a premium in addition to the administrative fee. Operations owned by limited resource, beginning, socially disadvantaged, or veteran farmers and ranchers can also be eligible for a waiver on administrative fees. Now, all dairy operations in the U.S. are eligible for the DMC program. An operation can be run by either a single producer or multiple producers who commercially produce and market cow's milk. Now, the DMC program does replace the Margin Protection Program for dairy. The Farm Bill does allow producers who participated in that MPP dairy between 2014 and 2017 to receive a repayment or credit for part of the premium paid into the program. FSA has been providing premium reimbursements to producers, and those that elect the 75% credit option will now have that credit applied towards their 2019 DMC premium. Now, the last enrollment numbers show that 68% of U.S. dairy operations with an established production history have already signed up for DMC. This represents more than 18,000 producers nationwide. The National Milk Producers Federation is urging farmers to sign up for DMC. For more information, just simply contact your local USDA service center. But again, sign-up deadline is September 20th. And outcomes from the inaugural American Lamb Summit were clear. All segments of the industry need to further improve lamb quality to keep and attract new customers and become more efficient to recapture market share from imported lamb. It was also clear that production technologies and product research put industry success within grasp. According to Dale Thorne, American Lamb Board Chairman, he said, "I've never been so enthusiastic about our industry's opportunities, but we just can't allow ourselves to be complacent or accept status quo." Now, the recent summit, sponsored by the American Lamb Board and Premier One Supplies, brought together 200 sheep producers, feeders, and packers from all over the country to Colorado State University in Fort Collins. The Lamb Checkoff Facebook page features summary videos from the sessions and additional resources. The Lamb Resource Center is the hub for all Lamb Summit information as it becomes available. Or to learn more about this, just simply go to AmericanLamb.com. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West.
Reportedly, some U.S. lawmakers are asking for possible significant changes in the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement. USDA's Undersecretary for Trade, Ted McKinney, who is on a trade mission to Canada this week, was asked about this during a phone call with reporters. His answer...
It's very, very difficult to reopen an agreement. I'm not intimately familiar with it, but sometimes there are things I think called side letters or other ways to address unanticipated questions or demands. But it would be very, very difficult to reopen the entire negotiation. The hope is that if there are needs, clearly Ambassador Lighthizer and his team are attempting to address those.
McKinney said Canadian officials and business people with whom he's been talking on this trade mission are very curious about how the ratification process is going in the U.S.
They have shared with us their keen hope that we get it passed.
Because Canadian lawmakers will not be taking up the agreement until the U.S. Congress approves it. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. More agriculture news and farm features are coming up. Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City News Day. We've got more agriculture news right now.
There is a checklist for any time of year. We just wrapped up summer, and those checklists for vacations, get-togethers, and such. Oh yeah, school checklists are all checked off by now as well. And we still have the holiday season checklist to go through. And with mid-September and National Farm Safety Week approaching, Scott Heiberger of the National Farm Medicine Center says the change of the season should serve as reminders to producers to change the items on their farm safety checklist. He notes an online farm safety checklist available for growers.
Farm Safety Check is a project that comes out of the Upper Midwest Agricultural Safety and Health Center at the University of Minnesota. They come out with a different topic every month, and these checklists are designed to both start a conversation and allow the farmer to customize the checklist for their particular operation. Obviously, every operation is different.
So, for example, with harvest underway in many parts of the country,
we've got some grain handling safety checklists,
as well as other harvest and storage-related topics, such as hay and silage harvest and storage, roadway safety, and fatigue.
Also, the UMASH Farm Safety Check has animal handling, both low-stress animal handling, if you have to do some working with needles, injections, and things like that.
Then comes the winter months, a time for maintenance of structures and equipment.
Information regarding electrical safety, heating safety, portable heaters, heat lamps. Are those in good working order? Are they in good repair? Are they firmly secured? And also just sort of general shop and building maintenance and safety. You'll look around your shop. You'll see if all the wiring is the way it should be. Maybe you need a new extension cord. All those types of things.
Next, the spring and summer months arrive, and there are areas to watch out for and consider from a farm safety standpoint.
You'd be doing things with tractor safety. There's a tractor safety checklist, ATV safety checklist.
Another consideration for that time of year and the ag work involved, such as heat illness prevention and skid steer safety. Heiberger adds the Farm Safety Check program also has checklists for general year-round farm safety considerations, such as child safety, safe digging, and fire prevention. These customized farm safety checklists can be found online at www.umash.umn.edu. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
How to build a do-it-yourself bee house. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. One way to help the honeybee population, or by simply bringing more pollinators into your yard, is not only growing things that will attract them, but by building things too, such as an easy-peasy do-it-yourself bee house. And you'll want to welcome the docile bee species, such as carpenter bees, mining bees, and mason bees. They're more likely to move into your living quarters and less likely to sting you. You'll be surprised at how easy it is to build a bamboo bee house. All you need is a foundation, like a PVC pipe, old wooden box, or anything you can find that will comfortably accommodate a handful of bamboo canes. A wood bee house functions similarly as a bamboo house, but it can be easily made out of a simple wood block or old stumps. Pallets are fantastic too for different species of bees because they can accommodate a variety of different design elements. Bees will also take residence on several layers of sod stacked up with dirt facing upward. I'm Kathy Isom for AgNet West.
Good day, everybody. Albert J. Hernandez, the Untamed Chef for AgNet West, and welcome to the California Kitchen, where you can learn how to cook from an award-winning chef in under 3 minutes or less. I'm your host with the most. Let's get untamed. So my recipe today is something that I think I love cooking this so much, and it's really not cooking more than it is browning and then roasting a little bit in the oven. Yes, I am talking about crab cakes. What makes them so incredible? Well, guess what? Crab during the winter is amazing. Now, typically you could get crab year round. Some of your better crab though, your snow crab, and some of your, the end season of your Dungeness crab is really good around this time of year. And if I haven't already said it, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to everyone. Here is my recipe for crab cakes. What I need first is 1 pound of Dungeness crab claw. Now, I understand there's some people that don't like to eat the claw, but I'm telling you right now, the claw has so much flavor into it. And what I like to do is just get it, and obviously I'm going to be wearing my gloves here because we always think safety first and we're always clean whenever we cook, making sure that I have my gloves on. And I'm just going to mush up that claw. I really want to get it ready so we can incorporate all the other ingredients to this. Now, it is very important to remember the crab claw. You always want to make sure it has a nice, fresh smell, a little bit of a sweet smell. If it smells bad, it probably is. Now, if you're buying crab out of a can, you might not have to worry about this. But if you're getting crab fresh, remember always make sure it's iced. Do not freeze it because then it's going to have that waterlogged flavor and you don't want that at all. So 1 pound of crab claw is going to go into my bowl along with 2 cups of panko breadcrumbs. Remember, panko are Japanese breadcrumbs. This is not shake and bake or any of those other breadcrumbs. This is panko, which means they're not crushed. They're actually rolled. I know that doesn't make sense to some people, but if you look at a panko, it's actually a very thin breadcrumb as opposed to something that's been just crushed or blended. 3 whole eggs. Make sure you mix this all around in here really good. It's almost like the same concept if you ever made meatballs before. It's the same thing. The only thing is that this is a fully cooked product, so we don't need to cook it so much, and the egg inside of it's going to cook very, very fast. Salt and pepper always to taste. Also lemon pepper to taste. I'm going to add to this 1 cup of mayonnaise. Now, always remember this. You're going to have 1 wet hand, 1 dry hand. We're going to use our wet hand, obviously, so we can roll these crab cakes. We're going to roll them into crab balls, and then we're going to squish them down with our hands. And then using your fingers, other than your index finger, your thumb, and then your 3 fingers, with your index finger out, I'm going to make a C. In that C, I'm going to go ahead and roll around this crab mixture. Very, very important. All I'm going to do after I roll it is put it into panko, cover it, put it in the fridge for 2 to 3 hours, and then put it in the 425 degree oven for 15 minutes and enjoy. I'm Albert J. Hernandez. You can call me the Untamed Chef for AgNet West.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. More agriculture news and farm features are coming up. Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City News Day. I'm Danielle Leal. Earlier in the show, we heard a report where U.S. Undersecretary Ted McKinney talks about the USMCA. Here is McKinney's full statement in regard to trade during a press conference that AgNet West joined in on.
Yes, well, good afternoon, good morning, wherever people might be. This is Ted McKinney, and I'm very grateful that several of you have elected to call in. So let me remind you that this year we will have a total of 7 agriculture trade missions. Last year we had 6, and in years prior there were always about 3. I think on occasion they would have 4. An ag trade mission has 3 parts to it. The primary is that we bring with us a number of branded companies, always in the small to mid-range, and inevitably our larger commodity groups of all sizes, shapes, types join us as well. And for those branded companies, a lot of their time is spent in what I lovingly call speed dating. We have a person that serves as a matchmaker that matches those who are coming along to sell with people in country, or in this case, the 2 provinces, first Ontario when we were in Toronto, and now Quebec, where we are in Montreal, with people who might buy. And inevitably, there's always some buying going on as well. And I love that because we always talk about trade being a very important two-way street. So selling, and in some cases buying, is one leg of our 3-legged stool. Also very important, the role I tend to play is we have government-to-government meetings. And as much as I can, and it's about it's the majority of the time, we bring our State Department of Ag representatives along for those visits. So G2G, or government to government. And finally, we visit key customers, people who have been purchasing or may be interested in purchasing U.S. food and ag products for their processing. And so once again, we have fulfilled or are fulfilling all 3 of those important elements. So we're here in Canada for many obvious reasons. USMCA, or some would call it NAFTA 2.0, is, we hope, coming in for a good, safe landing. The presidents and the prime minister have all signed that a few months ago in Buenos Aires. And now each of the countries, Mexico has already passed USMCA, the U.S. is working on it, we think, and Canada has reassured me again that they intend to take it up and pass it shortly after the U.S. does. So USMCA, with this new relationship that we're looking forward to, is very much a part of this. You know, are there new customers that we can find up here, and are there customers in the U.S. that the Canadians can find down there? And so this two-way street is very much a theme that we're following. I would also say that we are very much in the thank you mode. I think the U.S. agriculture, certainly farmers, ranchers, and processors, I don't think ever took for granted the U.S. or by extension the Mexican market. But we are certainly making sure that that's not the case by making sure that people understand how appreciative we are of such a close and reliable market for U.S. food and products. So that is a major theme that we're following here, is saying thank you and building trust, relationship, and building business. Some statistics or data that might help you. This time we have 53 delegates along. 22 of them are U.S. businesses, and then among that, we have a high number of spirits manufacturers, 7 spirits, so think of wine and spirits. We have 10 state departments of agriculture represented, and among those, there are 2 secretaries. Technically, one is a commissioner of the Commonwealth of Virginia. The other is the Secretary of Agriculture for the state of Maine. We have 2 deputy secretaries and a number of the state departments of ag who sent their trade and marketing people. So we're always, always pleased to have our partners, the states, there. And then we have what we call 12 cooperators. You might call those commodity groups. We call them cooperators. Specifically, the U.S. Soybean Export Council, USEC, is here. U.S. Grains Council is here. The Oregon Wine Board. The Wine Institute, WSATA is the Western United States Ag Trade Association. So those are the Western states, and they bring those branded companies. That's the avenue that those companies would find their way here. And then, similarly, we have the Food Export Association of the Midwest and Food Export Association of the Northeast. And that, again, are the two associations, in this case under one umbrella, that bring those branded food-related companies in from the Midwest and Northeast. So we have chosen two locations this time, and though I've known and loved and worked with my federal government counterparts, this one is almost exclusively working with provincial government leaders. I think you know that here in Canada, province in Canada equals state in the U.S., so this would be the Ministers of Agriculture for First Ontario, and just now finished a very nice session with the Minister of Ag and his team from Quebec. So two locations gives two bites at the apple, so to speak. Some highlights, we've been to the Ontario Food Terminal. Those of you that have been to some of the coasts would know what a terminal's like. This is very, very unique because it's inland. So some really special stuff going on there. We had an incredible industry roundtable hosted by Maple Leaf Foods. Now, those of you that might come or know Indiana well, like I do, this is not Maple Leaf Farms, the duck farm. This is Maple Leaf Foods. Terrific discussion there. And we had an incredible reception at the Hockey Hall of Fame, where we had government and industry and NGO guests of all types. And we shared the stage with the very famous Stanley Cup. So that's gone well. What we're looking forward to here is we'll go visit a very, very large and significant presence for PepsiCo Beverages. And then there's a reception that will overlook the important logistical seaway, the St. Lawrence Seaway. And then there will be an industry roundtable, which we always hold at every location at McGill University and its agricultural campus. So I would say that's it. Some of the key topics and questions that have come up, USMCA for sure has come up, although the majority of the discussion has really been how do we take a good thing and do better with it? They asking us how they can find their way to the U.S. and look for business. And of course, by virtue of us being here, our team looking to first Ontario and now Quebec, on how we can advance opportunities there.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. We'll have more of the day's agriculture news in just a moment. And remember, you can always get the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation at our website at www.agnetwest.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City News Day. We've got more agriculture news right now.
The information that technology can bring a producer should complement the human element. Farmers Edge owner Wade Barnes talks very frankly about how data shouldn't scare crop advisors. He says the information should be a tool that allows a good agronomist to do their job even better.
Yeah, so I mean, every time we have people that are fearful of us when we show up on the farm, thinking that, you know, we're going to get rid of their job, or we work with a retail and the agronomists all panic thinking, oh, we're going to be replaced. And that's, I mean, when you utilize AI with the human, that's the very best outcome. And I think in agriculture, that is the absolutely sweet sauce. You're not going to replace the human element out there, but what you're going to do is these tools are going to enhance the agronomist. Right now, a good agronomist can only get to 20 or 25,000 acres. And the problem is that people fight over the agronomist, and all of a sudden, you know, one retail moves one agronomist over, and then the farmers follow them, and or the agronomist retires, and then the grower goes, what am I going to do? And so I think now what you can do is you get a good agronomist, and he can scale. Instead of doing 25,000 acres, he's going to be able to do 250,000 acres. He'll still have that touch. He'll still be feeding in his human intelligence into the decision making, but he's going to be able to touch a lot more growers. And I think that there's a big problem in agriculture. There's a problem in labor, but there's also, I think, a problem coming with professional help, like a great agronomy person.
I So I'm a baseball fan, and I relate that to baseball. A lot of these younger managers are using analytics, but they still need to be the manager.
We have a farmer that we work with. He calls it blackjack farming. He said he's not a poker player, but he said blackjack is a bit of science, right? You don't always win, but at least if you play and play the odds and play the numbers, your outcome's going to be better. And sort of that's kind of how I think utilizing digital. Digital doesn't trump the weather. Digital doesn't change and make everything perfect, but it gives you a lot better odds of actually winning at the end of the day. And so no different than baseball. I'm from Canada, so they say now that the Raptors essentially won based on analytics when they were with their rosters. So there's a lot of this stuff that's happening. It's just starting to hit ag now.
Reporting for AgNet West, I'm Taylor Hillman.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture Economic Research Service recently released a new report series on loss-adjusted per capita food availability, which includes loss estimates broken down by commodity for the first time. The data shows that more than half of all fresh fruit and vegetables is lost to food waste. When combining food loss at both retail and consumer levels, the average total loss for all fresh fruit was 58.2% in 2017. And while not quite as bad, fresh vegetables had a total loss level of 51.7%. The loss-adjusted food availability data includes estimates for more than 200 commodities. The ERS partnered with RTI International to establish a panel of economic experts in order to review important technical issues and data gaps in the loss-adjusted food availability series. Two of the recommended changes include new loss factors for individual fresh fruits and vegetables, as well as a new edible weight estimate at the consumer level for all commodities. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can follow AgNet West on Twitter and Facebook with @AgNetWest. Follow Brian German with @BrianAgNetWest, Danielle Leal with @DLealAgNetWest, and Taylor Hillman with @TheManOfTheHill. This has been Farm City News Day by AgNet West.